Sunstein Sessions on iHeartRadio. Conversations about issues that matter. Here's your host, winner of two Gracie Awards, Shelley Sunstein.
You know, every year I say this because the years just fly by and by and by, but tomorrow is 16 years, the senior anniversary of the day that just changed our lives. September 11th here in New York City, we lost close to 3,000 at the World Trade Center, 343 firefighters, 23 NYPDers, 37 from the Port Authority Police Department. And every year, you know, we're getting further and further away, and it dawned on me that there's really just practically a whole generation that just doesn't know unless we keep story alive. Today I am talking to someone who is an eyewitness to history, because his job was being an eyewitness to history. When everyone was running away from the World Trade Center after the first plane hit, after the second plane hit, Tony Fiorinelli, as a freelance photographer, was running toward World Trade Center. So today we're going to get the perspective of somebody who was covering this horror, and not just that day, but for days on end. So first of all, Tony, welcome.
Thank you.
Where were you, and what were you doing when you first got news, and what did you do?
Well, I was just starting off my day as usual. I was sitting in my apartment, and I was on the computer answering emails and things of that nature.
And where was your apartment?
Forest Hills.
Okay.
And I always keep my radios on, my police scanners on, even when I'm not ready to just go running and chase a job, in case something happens, like in this particular day. So as I'm doing my emails and doing my chores, I hear on the radio a plane hit the World Trade Center. So at first I thought, okay, some idiot in his, you know, Piper just hit the building, and no big deal, it's not going to affect it. But then they started talking about how serious it was, how there's a gaping hole in the building, and I said, yeah, I have to get out of here. Now, back then, I used to chase news stories on my hauling. So I would normally get places quite quickly. This particular day, I didn't walk my dog yet. I had to walk my dog before I ran, so I didn't have the time to walk the dog, come back upstairs, get my gear, go. So instead of taking a hauling, I had to take the car. I took the dog with me. Thank God, because that delayed my response time about 20 minutes to a half hour. That small period of time would have put me under the second collapse instead of approaching the second collapse. So it's, I was home, and I ran there. It was difficult getting into the city, I must tell you. I was up and down the East River trying to get in over one of the bridges or the tunnel, and they wouldn't let me in. Finally, I was able to talk some cop into letting me go over the 59th Street Bridge. And then that's how I drove downtown and got there.
And when you got down there, what did you find?
I found people in hysteria, running around, covered in soot, because only the first building had collapsed by this point. Covered in soot, and they're being attended to by EMS, EMT workers, giving them oxygen, giving them water, and just everybody's just running around like chickens without head, pretty much. You know, nobody had a sense of really what to do, because this was, you know, such a horrific act, and with the collapse of one of the towers, that made it even that much more worse.
And tell us about, because you were there for the collapse of the second tower, where were you, what did you do?
I was at the tip of City Hall Park. I was making my way to ground zero, so to speak, which is only a block and a half away. And then the building's coming down, and I have cops yelling at me, go, 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 and I'm yelling back at them. I'm saying, but I have to go there. And they said, no, they're pushing me away. I said, but that cop told me I go. He said, get out of here. They pushed me away. But I only went a half a block, and the building pretty much, by the time it came down in seconds, I just, you know, went around the cops and got where I needed to go.
But were you caught in the cloud?
Oh, yeah. Oh, without a doubt. I looked like a dust bunny when I was all done that day. And it was an experience and a half, you know, because everybody was caught in the cloud. I mean, I have one of my photographs is of the cloud coming at me with people running from it as I'm running towards it. Yeah.
But that's insanity. I mean, like I said, you know, the firefighters we get, they run into a burning building, and even that is hard to wrap your head around. But you're not, well, you're a first responder of a different sort.
Yes.
And because, like I said, you are an eyewitness to history. If it wasn't for people like you, we wouldn't have these, these vivid scenes, which, by the way, you can see in Tony's documentary, and that's how I found out about all this with Tony. He reached out to me. His documentary is called Behind the Lens, covering 911. But it's not just you. It's the stories of several journalists who were involved with covering September 11th. I have to ask you, do you have an... First of all, how long were you down there covering this?
That day I was down there about 6 hours.
And then
I had to... I'm a freelancer, so I had to try to sell it, you know, and a couple of stations picked it up, and you know, for the that day's news shows. And,
so you had footage. You had. It wasn't just pictures.
Oh yeah, no. I did both actually that day. I had a, and it's. I'm a videographer. Yeah, my business is shooting film for the TV news shows. But I started out in the industry as a still photographer, and you would think I would learn my lesson. I didn't check batteries on my still camera, so like. After City Hall Park, my camera kind of died. You know, I wasn't, because I do mostly video, you know. But I was doing both. And it was a hairy situation. It really was.
And did you go back after that?
Oh, yeah. I was there for that whole week. And I was inside Ground Zero. That used to annoy me a little bit. Like, a reporter would be reporting how he's or she's at Ground Zero, when in reality, they were 2 miles away on like Houston Street with the long lens shooting down it because they couldn't get there. But I made it my business to get in. It was absolutely no force on earth that prevented me from going down to Ground Zero and being there and documenting those events. I was just compelled to go down there.
Tell me about the things that were seared into your memory from your coverage.
The smell. And it was a deafening silence.
What was the smell?
The smell, it was an undescribable burning smell. I mean, it was a multitude of materials burning. And with the mix of that, it was just a smell I really never smelled before, was the smell of burning. And the deafening sound of silence. The only thing you heard there was crackling of the fire, windows breaking out of the surrounding buildings and crashing to the ground, the sound of EMT and firefighter oxygen tanks, their alarm when they're out of oxygen, just beeping and just beeping and just beeping throughout my whole documentary. From the time I was there, you know, at Ground Zero, the day of the event, that's my background, is the beeping and the crackling and explosions. Yeah, a lot of people forget that, you know, the World Trade Center was also the home of the Port Authority, which had ammunition, which had weaponry. So in the background, you can always hear small arms fire going off. So when I was standing on Ground Zero, a multitude of things could have taken me out. It could have been a 2-inch piece of glass from a high rise above me falling on my head. It could have been a bullet from some of the ammunition that was in the building. But the most dangerous thing there were the oxygen tanks that were burning in the ambulances. I had two of them launch at me. You know, it was an explosion and it just like goes right by you. So it was an unusual situation.
Did you have any fear?
No.
Not even when that cloud was coming at you?
No.
Well, that you were running toward.
No. What I do, okay, and what my colleagues do that chase hard news, it's hard to explain, but we're not thinking about danger. We're not thinking about, oh my God, I'm going to get hurt. Our main focus is get there, get the job done. I mean, if you hear me talking on my documentary, I'm talking to one of my photographer friends, Stephen Hirsch, and we're just talking like matter-of-fact. Like, hey, you know, he broke his lens off his camera. Say, hey, you'll make more, you'll get more, don't worry about it. And we're just talking like it's a regular day. Because if we were to react with fear on everything that we were to cover, nothing would get covered. You wouldn't have a picture, you wouldn't have video, you wouldn't have stories written. It's just a journalist, a hard news journalist, doesn't think about those things. We just do it. You know, case in point, I covered the crash of Flight 800. I ended up going 10 miles out to sea on a 24-foot boat with an inexperienced captain and no life preservers in the middle of the night.
Well, a normal human being does not do that.
No.
I'm speaking with Tony Fiorinelli, and he was there September 11th, and for the week after he was there, because he is a different sort of first responder. He's a first responder who is a freelance journalist who documents historical events. Any news event can be a historical event. He ran toward the buildings. He ran toward the dust cloud when the second tower collapsed. So I wonder, because you were there for a week and you were covered with the dust cloud, do you have any health impact yourself?
I coughed for 6 months. I had a dry cough for 6 months. And I'm also under the care of the World Trade Center monitoring system.
Good.
But that whole thing with the government and with the clean air and sign up for the Zuriga Act and all that stuff, the government really let us down. The government really screwed us, matter of fact.
You mean even with the passage of the drug bill, how do you feel that way?
Well, because you have to sign up for different ailments in a certain time period. If you don't do that, you don't get anything. For argument's sake, I assumed wrongly that because I was part of the World Trade Center monitoring system, that I was like, that was part of the Zuriga Act, where I was in, and I was, you know, I'm known, so if I get sick, I can get care, I can get paid, I can, you know, I'm not suing the government, I'm not suing the airlines, I'm not suing the city, I'm not suing Giuliani or Christine, what was her
Christy
name?
Todd Christy Whitman, Todd Whitman, yeah. Who was the head of the EPA,
yeah,
who declared the air was safe.
I mean, like, you know, I'm down here, and they're telling me the air is safe, and I'm working, you know? Wind-up is that I found out the hard way, because I do have breathing issues, I have, you know, major sinus issues, I have, you know, sleep apnea, all the stuff that's related to that, and I'm not going to get anything from that, you know, because I signed up too late. So what I signed up for is that, you know, God forbid, knock wood, if I get cancer.
I thought there is, we'll check this for you,
yeah.
Once you're off the air, I have a number for you to call. I also wonder, because you were down there, your colleagues were down there, what you witnessed, do you suffer any post-traumatic stress? I mean, just what you do for a living, I have to think that you suffer post-traumatic stress.
You know, it's an anxiety, okay? Not so much post-traumatic stress, but more anxiety.
What do you mean?
I'm vigilant on what I'm watching. I'm always watching my back. I'm watching what's going around me. I'm looking who's in the street. I'm judging this one. I'm paying attention, in other words. When we look, photographers in general, when we're shooting a scene, it's not reality. It's a picture. We're looking through a lens, and the lens is a picture. You know, that's how I keep myself sane from all the stuff that I've seen. I've seen a lot worse than, even though the World Trade Center attacks were tremendous with the amount of loss, but I visually saw worse as far as carnage goes in other stories I've covered. You know, so it's a buildup of things over the years. You know, you get desensitized after a while. You know?
Have you noticed, though, when you were, you had a job to do, when you first responded that day on September 11th, and
right.
Then the aftermath for a week later, as it was for you, do you find that when you're covering something, you sort of, you disassociate, but it catches up to you, and then you find yourself, I'm asking because that's what happened when I covered the assassination of John Lennon. I had a job to do, I was there, I did that, reported for days after, and then about a week later, I just got severely depressed. It hit me all of a sudden. Do you find that happens to you?
It hit me that morning when I got home.
All right, what happened?
I sat down and I cried. I'm 6 foot. I'm 350 pounds. I'm a man that'll run into a burning building. I'm a man that goes 10 miles out to sea on a story. This affected me to the point where after I got home and it was all done and I actually had to wash my clothes before I went upstairs, my wife would not allow me in the house.
Well, she was smart.
Yeah, with those clothes. So here I am. I get home. I go right to the basement where the car is, and there's a change of clothes for me in the car, and I change right there in the garage. I had to wash up in a basin sink in a laundromat, and then I had to do my laundry.
Okay, quickly, because I have to move on to the next segment here. How can people see your documentary Behind the Lens covering 911?
Well, you can go to the website, www.covering911.com, and just follow the link for the video, and you can order it online. And it's just a little bit more than the cost of a movie ticket. You can own it yourself. Instead of having to download, you can have a copy of the DVD.
And you're going to see footage that you have not seen anywhere else.
Yeah.
After watching Tony's documentary, I couldn't get out of my chair.